This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is former Virginia Governor and Senator George Allen, who is once again a candidate for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate in the 2012 campaign. Right now, he has just released his Economic Blueprint for America's Comeback, which focuses on three key initiatives, which we'll discuss here in the next few moments. And, Senator, it's great to have you with us again.
Great being with you, Greg, and I do think it's time for an American comeback. This doesn't have to be a country with diminishing opportunity. The good news is there are some positive, constructive ideas that really can put the people back in charge and reinvigorate our entrepreneurial spirit.
There are three major overarching themes here, and just ask you to get a little more specific as we discuss each one. First of all, increasing America's competitiveness. Obviously, we got a jobs drought right now. Our economic trade balance is still in difficult shape. A lot of economic challenges we face. How do you make us more competitive?
Well, we've got to make our country more competitive. And with one policy change, we could send a clear message that America is open for business. We have, in the United States, the second highest tax on businesses amongst developed nations. It's 35%. Our government is taxing America out of competition. And it's American workers and consumers who are paying the price. So, rather than the international average is a 25% tax on businesses. Well, I believe America should be better than average, and so I propose we reduce the tax on job-creating businesses to 20%. That would create over 5 million new jobs in America over the next 10 years. And why not have the cost of doing business less in our country to give us a competitive advantage, which will unlock capital that's been sitting on the sidelines. It will make our country much more attractive for businesses to invest and create jobs, and which will in turn create more revenue without raising taxes.
The second point in your comeback initiative is unleashing our vast energy resources. Republicans, of course, over the past several years have largely embraced the all-of-the-above strategy, unleashing our own resources in terms of oil, natural gas, clean coal, but they also want nuclear as well as the renewable and cleaner energies. Is that essentially what this bullet point is all about? And how do you go about making it actually happen, given the huge fight that you'd probably encounter with the EPA, environmental groups, and so forth?
Well, that gets into two things. Number one, if we're really serious about American jobs and national security and revenues and reducing our dependency on foreign oil, we need to unleash our plentiful American energy resources and creativity. Most people don't know it, but America is blessed by being number one in the world with energy resources. The Russians are second, Saudis are third. Unfortunately, the sanctimonious social engineers up in Washington look at these resources as a curse. Now, we ought to be utilizing them, whether it's allowing Virginians, if we so desire to explore for oil and gas off our coast. We have energy from the Appalachian Mountains to the Mountain West, from the Gulf of Mexico, all the way up to the barren north slope of Alaska. If we did that, over a million jobs would be created. We'd have lower energy costs. The government potentially could get over $2 trillion in federal revenue. What is stopping us is really our own policies. They're counterproductive policies that keep us vulnerable to hostile dictators and oligarchs and cartels. Part of the entrepreneurial spirit of our country and our competitiveness also needs to be in regulating these regulators. And EPA wants to regulate CO2. The result of that would be skyrocketing electricity costs, higher fuel costs, higher food costs, enormous job losses. And since no other country is going to do this to their own citizens, it's economic unilateral disarmament. So in my view, we need to regulate the regulators. And if there's an economic impact that has a significant impact, say, of over $100 million, members of Congress ought to vote on that. They should not abdicate their constitutional responsibility to EPA, that no one ever elected EPA. And then you also have this National Labor Relations Board trying to stop Boeing from investing in South Carolina, a right-to-work state, as is Virginia. And that's just an infringement on our freedom and makes us less competitive as well. But the point is, we have it within our own means to get back in control of our own destiny and not be vulnerable to others because of counterproductive energy policies or dangerous debt or unnecessarily high taxation of entrepreneurs.
On to the third part of this plan now, and this is perhaps the thorniest. If you thought the first two were complicated, reining in the overspending, overreaching federal government. Obviously, that's a huge issue right now as we contemplate whether or not to raise the debt ceiling, and if so, what type of spending restrictions ought to be attached, what type of budget we need in the future. The Ryan Plan, of course, is at the center of all the different debates here in Washington right now, at least as a starting point for where Republicans want to head. What are your thoughts on those, and what are you specifically thinking of when you talk about reining in the government?
Well, a lot of things. We have over $14 trillion in debt and three straight years of record-setting deficits. There's no question that this federal government needs to be reined in from their overreaching and overspending. We've seen the stimulus and the expansion of government in a variety of ways. I'd get rid of all these czars. Heck, we overthrew a British monarchy. Why would we want a Russian monarchy? I think we ought to repeal and replace Obamacare with personal, affordable health care opportunities, including health savings accounts, and that would reduce spending. I think the federal government ought to operate the way that we run our households or our businesses, or in fact how state governments operate, and there ought to be a balanced budget requirement with taxpayer protection in the federal Constitution. That failed by one vote in the late 1990s. If we could, and I'd love to be the deciding vote to send a balanced budget requirement to the states for ratification. I would include in it, by the way, line item veto authority, which I used when I served the people of Virginia as governor, and I think the president should have that authority as well. I have no doubt that since 49 states have balanced budget requirements in their constitutions, that it would be ratified in 3 years, and I'd love to be the deciding vote to send it to the states. The other thing is that the way the federal government's gotten worse and worse, with they never get their job done on time. They keep passing these endless continuing resolutions. My view is if you don't get your job done on time, you withhold their pay. That's the way it is, and we just in the private sector for contractors, and I think we need to get back to basics in that regard. And so far as Medicaid as an entitlement, my view is we ought to trust the states, the laboratories of innovation. When I was governor, we led the nation in welfare reform 2 years before the federal law passed, and it saved the taxpayers money and moved people from dependency to independence. Medicaid is health care welfare. And what the Obama administration and Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid and all of them are doing is expanding dependency on Medicaid, which crowds out funding for higher education in the states and causes tuition increases. But the point is let the states that half of the money in Medicaid comes from state taxpayers, half from federal taxpayers. Let the states come up with their own ideas. I guarantee you, states will do it more efficiently and at less cost. On Medicare, people need to recognize that Medicare taxes and premiums cover only a little more than half of the program costs. So improvements need to be made if we're going to preserve Medicare for current and future seniors and protect the program from going broke. Now, the first step where you would think that there should be bipartisan consensus is rooting out the $50 billion every year that Medicare wastes on improper and fraudulent payments. And that in itself would help the solvency of it. But the point is, Medicaid, there's just great solutions to it if you trust the people in the states. And Medicare, we need to have a conversation with the people, but the first step that really ought to be taken, that everyone recognizes is going on, is this waste of really half a trillion dollars, $500 billion over a 10-year period, on fraudulent payments in Medicare, which is helping and healing and curing no one.
We're talking with former Virginia Senator George Allen in our last 60 seconds or so here, Senator. A question I'm sure you're going to get, if you haven't already gotten already, from either Governor Kaine or your Republican rivals, is they will say that during your 6 years in the Senate, during the first 6 years of the Bush administration, government rose pretty substantially. And they point to your votes for No Child Left Behind or the Medicare Prescription Drug Plan, which they say certainly added to the size of government. How will you either defend those votes or make the case that you're the right person to really shrink in and rein in the size of government?
Well, the prescription drug benefit, I had some concerns with it. One of the best things in it were health savings accounts, and that was one of the main reasons I was in favor of it, in the expansion of personalized health savings accounts. The other aspect was the ideas of competition and choice, and that has kept those costs down as far as prescription drugs. No Child Left Behind, that was a mistake. It's a lesson I've learned. I don't care if they're Republicans or Democrats. If the federal government's going to get involved in it, they're going to meddle. And I ultimately put in legislation to exempt Virginia and other states from it. Now, when they say things were so bad when I was there, Well, the unemployment rate when I left office was 4.4%, not 9.1%. The national debt was bad. It was $8.6 trillion. Now it's over $14 trillion. The price of gasoline in those days was a little over $2. It's now, you know, close to $4. And so I think that the ideas that we were working on then, some of them, like the balanced budget amendment and taxpayer protection and so forth, were things that I saw was necessary then. I'm hopeful to be the deciding vote to repeal Obamacare. If I were there, that never would have passed, nor would have the stimulus spending, nor would I have been for the bailout of auto manufacturers, which was wrong. So I think folks know me. I have the experience. If I'm back in there, I'll have that so-called seniority, and also the experience as governor, and saying, all right, look, this is how welfare reform worked in the past. It can work in the future as we allow the states greater flexibility insofar as Medicaid is concerned. And I'm proud of the record I've had serving the people of Virginia as governor and U.S. senator, and I hope they hire me on again to fight for them in Washington.
Well, it's a pleasure, sir, to talk to you today about your plan to bring America back, and we'll certainly be hopefully talking with you again as this campaign continues. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much, Greg, and you stay strong and positive for freedom.
Former Virginia Governor and Senator George Allen once again running for the U.S. Senate. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.